recap a little bit about where we left off yesterday, where we spent most of the afternoon actually really reflecting on this first and very central insight of understanding the emptiness of personality view, the view of I am, and how that personality view and the formation of personality view really rests upon many, many different conditions, being present, noticing that, you know, Sakkaya Ditti or the I am, the personality view, is not a constant, it's not ever present, that this is a changing landscape and a sense of the I am that arises and passes in relationship to the body, in relationship to events, in relationship to emotions and thoughts and perceptions. But we talked quite a lot about the interaction of personality view and mana, this conceit of self, this more underlying, this more background sense of relational positioning, of being better than or worse than or the same as. So what is, I think, is really helpful to examine is, you know, what are the conditions for the I am to arise? Because the I am is a very imprisoned, very contracted space, often generating a great deal of behaviors and speech and thoughts that are really born of that particular position, the way that we organize our world at the moment, according to the I am of the moment. So we're reflecting on the continuum that happens in the formation of I am. What is the process involved? Because we're trying to come back into this process mode of exploration, this process mode of reflection, and actually, you know, seeing the ways in which craving and aversion really intensify and magnify into what we call clinging or grasping or identification. And that is when process stops being process and actually has arrived at a destination that is a self-description, a self-definition. So craving and aversion are really very much the kind of forerunners of that clinging and forerunners of that identification. And of course, as we've mentioned yesterday, craving and clinging has its own origins, doesn't it, in confusion, in distortion, which are often, distortions that are often not very visible to us. Distortions not very visible for us. But it is those underlying distortions, of course, that provide almost the perfect conditions for craving and aversion and clinging to actually arise and to end up in that destination of I am. So this is actually the first liberating and perhaps the most significant insight of a stream enterer, to actually see the emptiness of the I am. To know that unshakably, to know that simply unshakably, which actually does not actually reduce anyone to being a sort of dysfunctional person, you know, unable to move in the world, unable to engage. In fact, it most likely releases us to be the most functional and creative and engaged people that we can be. I think we get a sense of how the I am formed of clinging is actually pretty debilitating, you know, and leads to the obsessions and the ruminations and the preoccupations and the judgments and the comparing that can so beset us actually and cause so much difficulty. So that was kind of basically where we ended yesterday. I mean, I just want to check in at this point whether there were any, you know, in the evenings or when you went home, any kind of reflections or questions that arose for you. Yes, please.
Yeah.
Well, that is the humanness of relationship, isn't it? I mean, to see the emptiness of I am is not going to in any way take away those places and those roles and those relationships in our lives, you know. And it would be terrible if it did, you know. This would be a sort of dissociated insight, I would say, you know. Suddenly, I'm not your mother. Oh, yes, you are, you know. But isn't this something that this, you know, look at the difference in clinging and actually fulfilling a relationship, fulfilling a relational role, you know? I mean, a relational role, you know, I mean, I'm a mother when I'm with my children, I'm definitely a mother, you know? And although sometimes they have questions about that, but you know, it's something relational. When I'm not with my children, yes, I'm actually not a mother all the time, you know. I'll be a mother when I actually see a picture of them, or, you know, get a message from them. Oh yes, you know, there's that relationship. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that lovely? And then you can also see the shadow side of that, isn't it? When that actually becomes a fixture of where you live in all moments. Now, what would make it the fixture of where you live in all moments? It would actually be, you know, the sort of the kind of identification that would lead, you know, maybe to possessiveness, maybe to dependency, maybe to anxiety, maybe to... And those things, not to say that they don't arise, but actually to really see that they are actually the offspring of clinging. They're the offspring of clinging. You know, it's like if you're, you know, if I go to the supermarket and check my groceries out, you know, and proceed to give a Dharma talk to the cashier, that would actually be a little bit of an indicator to me that I might be somewhat identified with this role. and you know, and actually would be completely inappropriate, you know, completely, you know, uncalled for, unasked for. But it's actually that need almost to sustain a role, because it provides an I am, and it provides a sense of meaning in my life, and provides a sense of way of organizing. So it's actually to see the fluidity of those relationships in our lives, and to be responsive and responsible and caring, you know, and actually to see that those roles can be free of all of the offspring of identification, you know, which is actually the obsessiveness and the, you know, the rumination and the holding and the need to promote and the need to defend. But knowing that those relationships of very human relationships are all going to bring their own measure of joy and grief, whether we're identified with them or not. Being non-identified doesn't mean not feeling. Doesn't mean not feeling and not caring. Yeah. Anybody else have anything left over? Yes, please. I think it would be really helpful not to consider this a daunting task, you know, because this is not at all a sort of esoteric or mysterious understanding. It's actually something that's very available to us. And I think what I really want to re-emphasize that I mentioned yesterday, we actually practice this insight, you know. The understanding of the emptiness of self is a fruition. But fruitions, you know, when it's unshakable, there's a fruition. But fruitions are born of a deepening and practicing of insight. You know, so I think this is why, as I mentioned yesterday, what this particular map of awakening actually provides for us is a map of practice. You know, so how do we practice non-clinging? You know, how do we practice seeing the emptiness of the I am? First of all, there needs to be really the willingness to do so, you know. You know, I have to remember, part of clinging is involving a lot of attachment to the I am. You know, it can be sort of fearful to think of, you know, what would that look like to be not invested in the I am, but I think it's really important that you actually have a little bit of exploration and begin to envisage what it might mean to move through this life without that centralization of I am. You know, to really have a sense of what would that look like? What, not only the liberation from the delusion of the I am, but the liberation from all the offspring of that delusion, what would that liberate inwardly? So I think it is so important to envisage this, but also to practice it, you know. And of course, the wonderful thing about this particular roadmap is it's not like you don't have the raw material for that practice available to you. You know, you have that raw material. So we actually start, you know, on so many levels to get familiar with that process of fabricating an I am, which at the same time, as I mentioned yesterday, is to fabricate the world in relationship to that I am. We learn to tune in to those signals, you know. Where do we sense it? Do we sense it in the body? Do we sense it relationally? You know, because, you know, so much, you know, the Buddha spoke so much about, you know, the level of quarrel and enmity and ill will in the world. And actually what you actually see, you know, these clashing I ams, don't you? Over and over again. So, you know, our clues might be relational, you know, when we start to see, you know, create the other or objectify the I am in the other. The clues might be in the body, the clues might be in the repetitiveness of thinking, the clues might be in emotions of fear and anxiety and aversion. So we actually start to actually really turn this into a practice. Otherwise it doesn't mean anything. Otherwise it stays daunting or impossible or, you know, remote. When actually we see, I start to tune into those, that movement of craving and aversion, and guess what? It doesn't intensify. It doesn't intensify because it's not being fed. If craving and aversion is not intensifying because it's not being fed, it doesn't turn into clinging. If it doesn't turn into clinging, it doesn't turn into the I am. You know, so, I mean, we start with what's available to us, and we start with it really as a practice. I mean, the Buddha very much encouraged the reflection, you know, in moments of clinging, to actually bring forward that reflection, you know, this is not me, this does not belong to me, this is not who I am. You know, I mean, it sounds a little bit sterile or a little bit abstract, but actually it's stopping the momentum, you know, and it's actually really realizing and understanding that the I am does not have an independent self-existence. You know, this is what the Buddha spoke about in terms of understanding the anatta or the emptiness of self. It does not have an independent self-existence, that the existence of the I am is always reliant upon supporting conditions. You know, the supporting conditions of clinging, the supporting conditions of craving and aversion, the supporting conditions of distortion, you know. And actually, if you take away the supporting conditions through understanding and through investigation, the I am has no sustenance to sustain. So it's so important to actually turn this into a practice and to turn it, you know, also, as I mentioned yesterday, to really, really sensitize ourselves to the moments when the I am is simply not occurring. It's simply not present. And not to sort of necessarily doubt those moments, or it's just hiding somewhere, you know. No, it's like there are moments when the I am is simply not present. Yes, please.
One of the things that I was reflecting on and noticing are the times, and you know, it occurs in practice, I notice it in practice a lot, the kind of identifying just with the knowing and seeing, you know, like I am the one who knows what is occurring in the body. I am the one who knows what's coming and going. And there can be a lot of, not a lot of aversion, not a lot of wanting of those objects, but there is that sort of feeling that I'm the one who's doing this thing, and kind of the way that if it intensifies, it gets to be a whole thing that I'm the meditator, this is my practice, is my practice going well or not, am I doing things right or not, is
It's what?
Interesting.
Yeah, it is good to see that play out. The way in which the I am identifies with the knower, or, you know, the seer or the observer, or then, of course, the one who is mindful, the one who is aware, the one who has a practice, you know. And this is where the I am is really being shaped around consciousness, you know, the identification with consciousness. And it's also, it's not to make too much of a muchness of that. I mean, it's not actually to turn that into a project. It is actually to be interested in it and to be curious about it. And, oh, look, you know, the I am is getting a little bit more subtle. You know, it's actually getting a little bit more subtle. It's actually really identifying with more refined and kind of bearing in mind what I read yesterday in that fire discourse, in the raft parable. You know, one should not identify with the wholesome. Never mind the unwholesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah.